The following program was pre-recorded on WFAN. It's time for Hello, My Name is Craig, our weekly candid conversation about gambling addiction. It's supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER. Now, here's Craig Carton.
All right, good morning. Welcome to another edition of Hello, My Name is Craig. Craig Carton with you for the next 30 minutes or so, talking about gambling addiction, speaking to men and women in recovery like me. And to that end, I'm very happy to have from New Jersey today, Gene. And Gene is a gambler in recovery as well. Gene, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Craig. Glad to be your brother in this cause.
Yeah, no doubt. When was your last wager?
My last bet was February 23rd, 2016.
All right, so you got, about 7 years under your belt now. Congratulations on that. I'm sure it feels great.
One day at a time.
No doubt. All right, so let's tell the story here a little bit. How old were you when you first got exposed to gambling?
I would say I was 10 years old, and I don't know exactly when, but I remember one of my very early influences was in the fifth grade when my fifth grade teacher read us the book, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah, of course.
You know that one?
It
became the Willy Wonka story later on. And this was a story about a kid in search of a golden ticket. And this fascinated me, and I wanted to get that golden ticket. And it kind of lit a spark in me.
That's so interesting because nobody ever thinks about the Roald Dahl classic as something that's connected to gambling. But in reality, that's exactly what it was. People spending their money on the hope or promise that they'd be the lucky person, to get the chocolate bar, the Wonka bar, with the golden ticket inside of it. And there's a lot of great similarities between that and, of course, the lives that you and I led. So once you saw that movie as a 10-year-old, when was the first time you read the book, pardon me?
Yeah. Yeah.
How did that manifest itself for you as a young kid or a teenager when it came to actual gambling?
Well, Craig, I believe that gambling is more of an environmental or a cultural thing that you acquire. I don't think it's in your DNA or anything like that. But I grew up in a family, oldest of three brothers, and my father gambled a little bit, and gambling was acceptable in the household. We played rummy for pennies and nickels and dimes, and I played ping pong for quarters with my brothers.
Right.
And it was just like it was okay, but little did I know that I I had that part of my DNA that where I was going to get carried away.
Yeah, and that's the weirdest thing about it. You know certain things are bad for you. I know if I smoke cigarettes, I have a higher chance of getting lung cancer. But when you drink, when you do drugs recreationally, and when you gamble, how could you possibly know? Unless, of course, you had a relative that went through it ahead of you. That you had the propensity to fall prey to the addiction of it. Most people, the far majority of people, can walk into a casino, play a couple hours of, blackjack or slots or roulette or, craps, go home and it's no big deal. They don't think twice about it. But then there's guys and gals like me and you who, for whatever reason, go down a certain road and then find ourselves completely out of control when it comes to gambling.
Yeah, it takes over. And, it's just something that bug bites you.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. How old a guy were you when you look back on your life with clarity now, where you can actually kind of pinpoint, maybe not the exact day, but an age range where you felt like gambling did start taking over?
Well, when I was in high school, I had a section in my notebook. There was history, English, math, and sports bets. I started running I believe you refer to as parlay cards.
Right.
At my job at the supermarket. Later on, I ran every pool that, there was, NCAA.
Sure.
The Triple Crown, the sport, every sport. It was just, I liked that image. I liked that image of being a gambler, of being a sports guy who knew, maybe what was going to happen, and what we're doing there when we do that is we're trying to predict the future and play God. But I was just a kid. I got in trouble when I was in college, took a hard fall. Dad bailed me out. So you know, I kind of promised at that point, I'll go to GA, and that'll be it.
If you don't mind, let me slow you down there just for a second, if you don't mind, without glossing over it. So you go to college, you went from being the guy that ran every pool to now obviously you're actively gambling. And what happened? You got in deep financially on bad bets that you couldn't pay off and had to call home and get help, or is it something else?
Yeah, I went to school locally, you know, from home. You know, I tried to get a cousin to help me on the bailout, and then it turned into a family meeting, and that was my first hard fall.
Got it. And back then, I'm assuming it was you're talking about like street agents and bookies, not, you know, the way it is today, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
God. So after that experience, you know, when you have to kind of suck it up and go to family members and deal with the reality that they now know, not maybe not that you have a problem, but certainly that you're gambling behind their backs, they're unaware of your gambling, and got to buy you out and take care of you so you don't get hurt or you know, get in deeper. How long did you go at that point without gambling, or was it, hey, I'm just going to pay lip service to it, and I went right back out to gambling?
No, I was good for a while. You know, like, we do have those sabbaticals where we think that we're okay. And, you know, what I did, and it was rationalization, was I started playing in the New Jersey lottery.
Okay.
And, you know, that was my excuse. Hey, this is a good thing. This helps me control my gambling. I'm not sports betting. I'm not at the track.
Right.
I'm not in AC. All I'm doing is playing the lottery. But that fed the dragon. You know, that's the beast. You know, it kept that fever going. You know, until, if I may, fast forward 5 years, I scratch off a lottery ticket for a large amount. I'm a winner. I pay dad back. I'm clear. I feel like now I got the Midas touch. So I'm back in action.
That's so interesting to me, though, that it wasn't until you made your dad whole that you went, you know, back into the deep end. That's interesting to me.
Oh, yeah.
Because at that point, you're like, hey, he can't say anything to me. I paid him back. So he's good. Everybody's whole. I don't owe anybody any money. I got a couple extra bucks left over from my, you know, fortunate win with a scratch off. You know, why wouldn't I go gamble? I love doing it. I'm out of trouble, and I'm sure at some point I'm going to figure it out and get it right, yeah?
Yeah, let's gamble. I'm a gambler. I won. I'm a winner.
Sure. It's funny, when I was in rehab, I met a couple people whose addiction was, you know, dollar scratch-offs, and it never dawned on me that, you know, you could be addicted to that. And then as, you know, I've spent time, as you have in GA, there was a woman in one of my GA rooms who literally, very open and honest about it, you know, every other Friday when she got paid from her, you know, very blue collar job, making about $35,000 a year, there would be oftentimes when she would take, you know, an $800, $900 check that she worked her ass off for, and $500 of it would be gone in scratch offs before she got home. And when you hear stories like that, you know, you started getting, I think, a better appreciation for, it doesn't matter how much money it is, it doesn't matter what the game is. You know, it's the gambling. It's the, whether it's the action, whether it's the thinking you're going to win, whatever it might be. You don't have to spend $15,000 on a hand of blackjack. It could be a dollar scratch off, and we process it the exact same way.
Right. Same disease. Everybody has a different rock bottom.
Yep.
You know, and you never can compare yourself to, you know, that story or the other story. Like, some people you go like, wow, that's really bad. And other people you say, what is this guy doing here? He doesn't even have a problem.
Yeah,
you know, it's all the same disease, and it has the potential to destroy you.
You know, for me, the only guy that I ever heard talk about gambling openly where I, you know, before I got help and figured out that I had a problem, where it made sense to me was actually Charles Barkley. And I don't know if I'm not sure if I've ever told this story publicly, but I will now for the sake of this show. You know, when I got in trouble, the very first person to reach out to me was Charles Barkley.
Really?
Yeah, because, you know, we were never like close friends or anything, but he'd been on our show a number of times. We knew each other. We never gambled with one another, but, you know, when my story came out that a lot of my self-inflicted wounds were centered around playing blackjack and, you know, huge wins and losses, he could relate to that. And he once said, and I live this, where, you know, when you're going out there and you're spending, you know, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 a hand, and you have seven-figure wins, the way the gambling mind, the addictive mind processes it, and I related to this, was that, you know, if I'm up $300,000, I should walk away. It's enough money. It's more than what most people make in a year. And
never
yet,
enough.
And yet, once you have the taste of a million-dollar win at a blackjack table, you know, 300 grand just isn't enough because I know I can get to a million because I've done it before. And Charles stopped gambling for a couple of years because he had enough people in his life saying, Chuck, you just won $350,000. That's a great weekend. Let's go enjoy it. But his mind was saying, 350 should be a million. I've done it before. And I related to that very, very much so. For you, before we take our break here and talk about the good stuff, when you look back on, if you don't mind sharing, what was your bottom of the barrel worst moment that led you to eventually get the help that you've gotten?
I'll be glad to speak on that. My last bet was in Atlantic City, New Jersey. I had really wound down my gambling a lot, and this was kind of like a last-ditch effort. It was my wife's birthday, and we were with friends, and we won a little bit of money. And then I got, you know, to the room. My wife fell asleep, and I took those winnings down to the casino, and I blew it all. You know, it wasn't a ton of money, but it was a good amount of money. It left me pockets empty the next day. You know, and the next day I borrowed some money from a friend, went over to play back blackjack, snuck away from everybody, was up, bet it all on one hand, and I was holding 20, and the dealer had a 7 showing. My wife comes up from behind me and says, "What are you doing?" And the dealer flipped over his third 7 and beat me.
Wow.
And I turned around my wife and said, "You just destroyed my mojo." You know, and,
right.
You know. And I blamed it all on her. And I finally realized, hey, man, you know, this isn't a life I want to lead. I don't want to go into my 60s a gambler.
Sure.
So I'm going to stop it here and now. This is the end. So I try not to use gambling expressions, but I laid it all out for her. You know, cards on the table. Okay.
Yeah, I get you.
Yeah. And said, you know, I'm quitting. I said, we're in a financial jam. We're not destroyed, but you know, I'm done, you know, and I'm so sorry. And that was almost the end of it for us, but through the grace of God, she was able to forgive me. We moved on from it. I started going to meetings and I never looked back.
Let me stop you right there. We'll take a very quick break. We'll continue on with Gene, a fellow gambler in recovery in New Jersey, right after this.
Back to more of Hello, My Name is Craig on The Fan with your host, Craig Carton, and supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER.
Welcome back to Hello, My Name is Craig. Craig Carton with you talking to Gene in New Jersey. So, Gene, when you stopped cold turkey like that, you must have had urges to gamble again. How did you avoid those urges? And was there ever a point once you said to your wife, "All right, listen, I got a problem," and she agreed to stay with you and work on it with you? Was there ever a moment where you kind of fell off and did gamble again, or was it legitimately, "I'm done," and you were done?
I'm going to say my story might be a little bit different. That I was fed up at that point. I was sick and tired of being sick and tired, and I know you've heard that expression many times in the rooms.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, I made the commitment there and then that I'm going to do this. And, you know, I never, again, through the grace of God, have felt another urge to gamble.
And let me stop you on that, because isn't that crazy? Because I've said in the show, you know, the last couple shows, that I still can't figure out how I convinced my brain to make the commitment not to gamble again. And while you're working on 7 years now without it, and I wish I could figure out why I just, you know, got it, why the light bulb went off. Because for the life of me, I gambled after I got arrested. I gambled after I went to rehab. I gambled right before I went to prison. Well, not right before, but, you know, certainly before my trial started. And I cannot figure out why I woke up one day and said, okay, now I'm done, and literally haven't gambled or had the urge to gamble since.
Well, I try not to figure it out, you know, and I recommend from my experience that you do the same. You know, we both went through a rough ride. You know, we can't measure one versus the other. But, you know, commitment to me is the foundation of recovery.
Yeah.
Spirituality, accountability, you know, and changing your mentality. And you're able to do that successfully. And maybe you have those tools around you being what with what you do, you know, to know that. And, you know, at first, I must be honest, you know, I questioned, you know, the validity of your recovery because I said, how is he going to do that in that world?
Sure.
You know, but you've done it. And, you know, I this might be a little bit, disturbing to you, but I have to say, you're a great role model for people in recovery, and what you're doing is greatly admired. The strength that you've shown and the effort that you put in for this program, my hat's off to you, and thank you for doing
it. Well, I appreciate it very much, and I'm sure you'd say the same. Like you, I'm very blessed to have really good people in my life who want to see me do well, who are now very, very sensitive to where am I, what am I doing, what's going on my phone, you know, all those things that, you know, I hid before, whether it's gambling on the phone or lying about where I was going or what I was doing. I now have surrounded myself with enough really good people who won't allow me to go down that road if I, you know, chose to. I'll say this, you know, talking to guys like you, it just reinforces to me that, you know, we're making the right decisions now. I'm on the right path. And not that every day is easy, because they're not. And I still have a lot of issues and mountains I've got to climb financially that are well documented. Life is just, you know, it's funny. I loved gambling, sports gambling. Blackjack, of course, became my bugaboo. But I loved it. I thought I was really good at it. You know, crazy talk. And if you'd said to me at any part of my life that I would willingly just say, I'm never going to gamble again, I would have told you were crazy. But my life is just so much better not gambling from a standpoint of, like, I have the same problems anyone else has, you know, family problems, financial problems, all that kind of stuff. But my brain used to be so overwhelmingly consumed with gambling thoughts, and just having that free brain space back alone is life-changing in a manner I never thought it would be.
Amazing, you know, once that urge is gone, how much more productive you can be, and you get that clarity that you spoke of, and what a better life it is, how freeing it is. Yep. Like, I used to blow every tax return, you know, every time I had my hands on any kind of money, I was going to burn it, you know. And yeah, I loved gambling too, you know, and I love that I got to gamble for 50 years and I didn't go to prison, and I didn't go insane, I didn't die. I don't know how that happened. I don't know how I didn't destroy my nervous system with the you know, the stress I put on myself gambling. Life is stressful enough.
So let me ask you this before we let you go. It sounds like you're in a really good place and your family's still together and all that. There are a lot of people that are listening to this show that have no concept of recovery, that recognize they've got a problem, or maybe even worse, they've got a loved one or a buddy or a girlfriend that has a problem, and they're not sure, you know, how to get them help, and they don't think that they could ever get to where you and I are both, you know, at right now. When you counsel younger gamblers, when you go to a GA meeting, what do you say to somebody that is at step one of this process, and like you and I felt, you know, 5 years ago, 7 years ago, you know, like the walls are caving in and, you know, I don't know if I even want to wake up tomorrow. What do you say to that young person starting off at square one right now?
The first thought that comes to mind, Craig, is, you know, for God's sake, forgive yourself, you know, and start working on yourself. The time that you use to gamble, flip the script, start using it to recover, because it's much better for you, and it's a hell of a lot easier. You know, the charade that we played, you know, the lies, you know, you don't have to do it. Life doesn't have to be that way. It's not worth it. Make a little list. Take a piece of paper and a pencil and write down a list of healthy distractions and just start doing those, and you'll find so many things that are so much better than gambling.
Well,
it's out there. Grab onto it with both hands.
I appreciate you coming on. I think more people need to start sharing their stories like you did. Hopefully I can return the favor one day. And I'm proud of you, and I'm grateful that you came on. to share your story. Thank you so much. I hope to see you one day soon, okay?
I'm glad I could be a part of this effort, and I appreciate you having me on. And God bless and much love to you and everybody out there suffering from this insidious disease.
Thanks, Gene. Have a great day. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Greg. You too.
Be well.
All right, great. Bye now.
You got Joe Beningo coming up next on The Fan.